Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Tuesday, May 30th. An article on Slate reminds us that some U.S. military officers are predicting we will be at war with China in the next few years. But it cites as good news this statement by President Biden last week at the G7 summit in Japan about the increasing belligerence on both sides, maybe getting ready to tone down.
We should have an open hotline. At the Bali conference, that's what the President Xi and I agreed we were going to do and meet on. And then this silly balloon that was carrying two freight cars worth of spying equipment was flying over the United States, and it got shot down, and everything changed in terms of talking to one another. I think you're going to see that begin to thaw very shortly.
I think you're going to see that begin to thaw very shortly, said President Joe Biden. Republicans, of course, running for president seem to be falling all over themselves, trying to be tougher than the next person on China. Ron DeSantis, did you hear this? Even signed a bill this month, with all the other things Ron DeSantis did, this barely made national news, prohibiting citizens of China from buying land in parts of Florida. His press release on the signing says Governor Ron DeSantis cracks down on communist China. So with all that as backdrop, with us now is the writer of the Slate article on Biden and China, Fred Kaplan, who covers military affairs for Slate in his column called War Stories. He is also the author of books, including his latest, The Bomb, Presidents, Generals, and the Secret History of Nuclear War. Fred, always good to have you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
The clip we played of President Biden is what you cite at the beginning of your article on avoiding war with China. But you also cite those military officers who predict we will be at war with China, including one who predicted as early as this year. So can we start there? And you'll tell us who's predicting war with China and why?
Well, it was in March of 2021 that Admiral Philip Davidson, who was the outgoing commander of U.S. military forces in Pacific, said in a hearing that he thought we would be at war with China in the next 6 years. He said that without having his testimony approved by any superior, which was very unusual. It also was something that was disputed explicitly by the Defense Department's own report about Chinese military power, which doesn't make any prediction like this at all. There have been statements that Chairman Xi and other Chinese officials have talked about by the end of this decade having attained a certain level of a professional army. But nothing even remotely hinting at being able or even willing to go to war for Taiwan or any other goal that it has in mind. What's going on politically, it's very interesting. We might remember earlier this month, Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor and his Chinese counterpart, met in Vienna and held 10 hours of talks, which is just extraordinary. And according to the readouts from both sides, talking about the most fundamental issues dividing the U.S. and China now. At the end of it, the White House released a statement calling the talks candid, substantive, and constructive. China called them candid, in-depth, substantive and constructive.
Same language, basically.
Basically, and these things mean something. It might sound kind of empty and bland to us, but those adjectives mean something. They mean that things were discussed and it was actually positive and creating the basis for further constructive dialogue. So, and then put Biden's remark on that. And then, you know, the thing about the balloon. Right before the balloon happened, Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, was going to go over to Beijing and talk with Xi himself, the first time that a Secretary of State had done so for 6 years, presumably to lay out some areas where there might be some re-engagement. The balloon made that impossible. And the question is just whether and when things can get back in track. I assume it's going to be at the meeting in Bali later this year. And it's the kind of thing that really has to be done by Biden and Xi directly. And unless there's some other crazy incident between now and then, I think both sides have a real incentive for this to happen.
And we'll talk about the Ukraine war relationship to this. China kind of caught in the middle in a certain respect. But you wrote that good news article last week. Then just yesterday, I saw the reports of China turning down an invitation for the two countries' top defense officials to meet. Did you see that or know what that's about?
Yeah. Well, this is the second time this has happened. There have generally been, you know, routine military-to-military relations. We have them with Russia, even on certain things, with China, with all kinds of countries. And there are regular meetings, and twice in a row now China has said, no, we don't want to do this. Now, this is the Chinese military force. It's not necessarily Xi. They may be waiting for cues to be read from the political level. I don't know. These things are quite cryptic and, from an outsider's point of view, impenetrable. It is disturbing. It does show that, you know, maybe they're telling Biden, hey, don't get too far ahead on your skis there. We still have a lot of things to work out. You know, there are very good reasons why you want to have generals and generals talking with each other. I mean, even the U.S. and Russia, which has almost no relations now, there are what are called deconfliction talks or deconfliction notifications, say in Syria, where both sides have military forces. Each notifies the other when certain things are going to happen, so that, you know, you don't ram an airplane into another guy's airplane. It's just natural, self-interested kinds of things. And it's that sort of thing that is not going on with the U.S. and China now. And, yeah, that creates a dangerous situation for regardless of what political signals might be intended.
Fred, our non-troop support for Ukraine is controversial enough. What's the U.S. commitment to defending Taiwan if China were to invade? Does it include troops, which we're not sending to Ukraine?
No, it does not. Although we have this thing that we call strategic ambiguity with Taiwan, and it's very bizarre. And for anybody not deeply immersed in the arcana of international relations, it sounds almost absurd. We do not recognize Taiwan as an independent nation. However, we do send them billions of dollars worth of weapons, and we do have a treaty if they are attacked that we will help them defend themselves. Now, Biden has poured even further confusion on this by saying three times in answer to a question, he's been asked on three separate occasions, will we defend Taiwan if they are attacked? And he has said yes.
Yeah.
And as one columnist, I forget who, wrote that, you know, one time is a mistake, three times is policy. Does it mean we will actually, you know, take part in the war? That's not part of the commitment. But it's a very unusual thing, you know, the Chinese call it, you know, one nation, two systems. It's hard to say what would happen if China actually did attack Taiwan. But yeah, U.S., some aspect of the United States would be involved, whether troops would be sent. Nobody is saying, and it's deliberate that we don't say.
Saul in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Saul.
Yes, good morning, Brian, and good morning, Mr. Kaplan. Given the focus of this conversation on individuals that come to mind on Memorial Day, as well as the China topic, I'd like to ask Mr. Kaplan about Dr. Kissinger, who has been celebrating his 100th birthday, I think, on May 27th, and is being both lauded and vilified all over the news at the moment. He certainly comes to mind with respect to all the tragic losses during many wars in the United States, from Vietnam to the military situation in Chile to Cambodia to many other places. And with respect to China, he's always been a proponent of engagement with China, but sometimes, at least some critics believe, to the detriment of the United States. I read, Mr. Kaplan, I don't know if you did, a recent book called America's Second, How America's Elites Are Making China Stronger, arguing that particularly people engaged in commercial interaction with China over the last 30, 40 years, prominent people, have actually contributed to the type of strength and confrontation we now believe we may have with China. A big chunk of that book is devoted to Henry Kissinger. So I'd like to ask Mr. Kaplan for his assessment how we should think about Dr. Kissinger in the conversation we're having this morning.
So thank you for that. And I will note for our audience that Fred did write an article on Slate on the 100th birthday of Henry Kissinger. So, Fred, where do you want to take it?
Yeah, well, I'm mainly on the side of Team Vilify, I guess. Mm. I mean, Kissinger is to be commended for a few things. You know, the détente with the Soviet Union, the opening of China, the shuttle diplomacy in the Middle East. But even those things didn't have much long-term effect. I mean, Jimmy Carter's negotiated peace between Israel and Egypt has endured all this time. Kissinger's peace with Syria and Israel has not. His opening to China was primarily as a part of a triangulation to beat back the Soviet Union and try to coerce them out of supporting Vietnam. Neither of those things worked. But more than that, I mean, Kissinger has been involved in some of the most disreputable and really reprehensible aspects of U.S. foreign policy in the last half century. I mean, secret bombings of Cambodia, Vietnam. I mean, that was in conjunction with Nixon. He was pushing Nixon on. But for example, Chile, where Salvador Allende, a socialist, was elected president in a democratic election. Nixon was about to receive a briefing from State Department officials calling for him to make a kind of a modus, reach some kind of modus vivendi with Allende. Kissinger got, who was national security advisor, got the briefing postponed and convinced Nixon that he had to crush Allende. He had to make the economy scream. And so Kissinger was the head of a committee, which was mainly peopled by CIA agents, to wreck the Chilean economy, to pay off truck drivers to go on strike, to help support the military. The economy was reeling as a result of this, and Allende was overthrown. General Pinochet came in power and started a campaign of brutal repression and torture of his critics. They assassinated a prominent exile critic, Orlando Letelier, with a car bombing in the streets of Washington, D.C., which also killed a young American colleague of his. No protests of this by the United States or by Kissinger. In fact, later declassified documents showed Kissinger encouraging Pinochet to, you know, do what you have to do and do it as quickly as possible. Mm. He did the same thing with the coup plotters in Argentina. Yes, we understand that you have a civil war going on. Do what you need to do. Encouraging Suharto's, the Indonesian invasion of East Timor, East Pakistan's invasion, just, I mean, all over the map, just some of the most brutal events of late 20th century. Henry Kissinger supported and got the United States to encourage. And, you know, Kissinger is known to be a realpolitik, you know, realism in international affairs. Now, don't clutter your policy, which should be based just on foreign policy interests, with notions of morality and that sort of thing. Well, I mean, he wrecked realpolitik, too, because as a result of American alignment with some of the most dreadful things on the planet, he actually harmed American national security interests. He gave America a black eye in the world. He made us look bad. He made us look immoral. And even, you know, the most profound practitioners and theoreticians of realpolitik, people like George Kennan, there was always a moral undercurrent to their realism. They always recognized that what really had to sell to the world was the image of what the United States is, that would have the biggest impact. And Kissinger, I think, did as much as any one person in the United States to wreck that whole notion of that dimension of international realism.
So mostly on Team Vilify on the occasion of Henry Kissinger's 100th birthday. Fred Kaplan, the military affairs columnist for Slate. Ukraine is going to wind up getting short shrift in this conversation, but you did also write an article this month, talk about back in the old days, as you were just doing, the using China as a way of triangulating. President Xi of China called Zelensky, and you wrote an article about that. So how do you see China's role in that war, if any, and how China's role relates to the U.S. and Russia? Who's triangulating who?
Yeah. Well, I think China could have a productive effect on this, but not the way they're doing it. I mean, Xi is kind of in a bind. Xi signed this no-limits partnership with Putin about a month before Putin invaded Ukraine. It is believed that Xi really didn't know that that was going to happen. Then he got stuck with a guy. He hasn't provided any military assistance to Russia, though he's providing a lot of economic aid. He's keeping their economy afloat. He offered a peace plan to Ukraine, which really was kind of a non-starter, but Zelensky was interested enough in it to at least want to have a conversation. It looks like all the Xi is really trying to do is to split Europe apart from the United States, which, by the way, is one of his main long-term strategic foreign policy interests. But the Europeans aren't biting. They're very much in favor of continuing to support Ukraine. They see behind what's behind Xi's rather shallow peace offering. But, you know, I do think it's true. If Xi really wanted to have a peace in Ukraine and put the pressure on Russia and attached continued economic aid to their withdrawal, he could have an effect. But, you know, he has two conflicting goals on Ukraine. One, he wants to keep the United States preoccupied in Europe so they can't put more military forces in the Pacific. He wants to split Europe from the United States for the same reason, to weaken the United States. But he wants to build up his alliance with Russia to that end. But if Russia is just going to be a burden, if Russia is just going to be a drain, and if an alliance with Russia is going to make him, make China, make Xi less appealing to the Europeans that he wants to be closer with, then it becomes counterproductive. So he has some rather strategic decisions to make in the coming months.
Fred Kaplan writes the War Stories column for Slate. His latest two articles are on the prospects for war or not with China and on Henry Kissinger's 100th birthday. Fred, thank you so much.
Sure, anytime.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.